Dalad Amar Aleph at the two dots. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Kol ani talin v'hanigrarin sveik on tame mipnei shehin kemunachin v'hanizrakin sveik on tar chutz min kizayis hameis v'hama'ahil al p'nei tuma v'chol dover shemetame milamala kilamata li'isuye zavizavam. The Gemara tells us that if a person either picks up or drags something, which is suffic, whether it's tameh, so then we have to be machmir, we treat the item as if it's resting on the ground, and we assume that the person is tameh. However, if he throws an item that's a suffic, then he's tahor, with a few exceptions. If the item is either a kezias from a corpse, or if it's an item that's overlaying, or that's overhanging a dead body, or anything which is metame milamala kilamata, which basically means that anything above you or below you, even if you're not directly touching it, is tame. For example, the Gemara says a zav and a zava. There's a din the Gemara tells us in several places that a zav and a zava are metame, what's called nishkav tachton ke'elyon, that whatever is beneath them or above them, even if they're not directly touching it, is metame. Those are the exceptions. So for example, if you were to throw, let's say, a piece of a corpse, or something which is overhanging a mace, so those types of things would make you tame, but in general, anything which you throw where there's a suffix, you're going to remain tar. Then the Gemara says, "Boy, Rami Bar Chama, Nis Bichli." Uchlit saf al penei hamayim mahu. Basar kliyaz linan o basar misaz linan. So the Gemara is the following shayla. Let's say there's a corpse inside of a vessel, and the vessel is floating on water. So the question is, do you follow the kli, or do you follow the corpse? Do we say that it's floating on a liquid, or floating on a solid? So the Gemara says, imtim tzolomar basar kliyaz linan meis al gabi sheretz mahu. Let's say we assume that it's considered to be floating, in other words, that we follow the kli, and the kli is floating on water. What would the din be if you have a corpse that's on top of a dead sheretz? Kevan the height So on the one hand, you can argue that the standards for the two types of tumah are very different. We know that a corpse, a human corpse, is metame for 7 days, whereas a dead sheretz is only metame for 1 day. So one could argue that the sheretz is almost acting like the kli for the corpse. Maybe no, maybe you can argue that both the corpse and the sheretz are considered to be like one solid entity. Then the Gemara says, "Vintim tzolomar keman demach tutum bechli damya v'tamei vaday sheretz al gabe nevela unevela tzafa mahu kevan disravayu tumas erevino and tumas mechtehi odil mahay kezayis v'hay ka'adash." The Gemara is a further shaila that even if you want to argue that the sheretz is essentially a kli for the mace, well, what if you have a case of a sheretz on top of a nevela, on top of a dead animal carcass, and the nevela is floating on water? So do we say that since both a nevela and a sheretz are metame only for 1 day, so we view that as if it's one entity? Or maybe no, maybe you can argue that the shear for the two of them are radically different. The shear for a nevela to be metame is a kezias, whereas the shear for a sheretz to be metame is only an adasha, the size of a lentil. So maybe they're actually considered to be two different entities. Then the Gemara says, sheretz al gabi sheretz mahu. What if you have one dead sheretz on top of another? So the Gemara says, "Hani vadechad shiurinenu odilma kevin demifshik kevin demifshik me'adadelo." On the one hand, you could argue that they're basically the same thing; they're two shrutzim, so that should be viewed as one entity. Or maybe no, you could say that one sheretz is interposing, is acting as a hefsek between the water. Ve'imtim tzolomar sheretz al gabi sheretz kevin demifshik me'adade keman demancha bechli damei sheretz al gabi nevela sheni mocha mahu kevin deni mocha havi le'mashke odilma hay uchlu. Then the Gemara is a further shaila. The Gemara says, if you want to argue that one sheretz on top of another is considered to be like two separate entities because there's one that's interposing between the second sheretz and the water, so the Gemara says, what if you have a sheretz on top of a nevela that's dissolved? So the question is, the nevela used to be a solid, now it's dissolved into a liquid, so do we view that as a liquid, or do we still assume that that's basically a solid? And even if you want to argue that a dissolved nevela is still considered to be a solid, what if you have a sheretz on top of shechva zera? The imtim salomar kevin de misakra havale ki uchla. And even if you want to argue that since the shechva zera has been removed from the body, it's therefore no longer considered to be a solid. So then the Gemara is a further shayla. Sheretz agabe mechatas to mechatas tzafin agabe amayim mahu lo yadinan teku. Then the Gemara ends with the final shayla, which is, what if you have a sheretz floating on top of the waters that were used, or the ashes that were used for the para aduma, and those ashes were floating on top of water? Is that basically a solid or a liquid? So the Gemara, at least all of these shaylas are unresolved. The Gemara is not sure what the answer to any of these questions are, whether these are fundamentally solids or liquids. Fine. Then the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Hamnuna, Nazir va'osa pesach shehalchu bekever hatahom b'shvi'i shalohen tahorim, my taima delo alima tumas hatahom l'misa." This is a throwback to a little bit what we were discussing yesterday. The Gemara says, if a person's a nazir, or a person is in the process of preparing the Karban Pesach, and then it's the seventh day of their you know, at the end of their tumah, they're about to become tahor, and then they find out afterwards that they encountered tumas hatahom, which we spoke a lot about yesterday. Is again this tumah of the depths that people didn't know about. He only discovered after the fact. So the Gemara says that we still treat them as being tahor. The reason is because tumas hatahom is not strong enough to undermine their previous 7-day count of now becoming tahor. So asks the Gemara, Masiv Rava Yorad li tahor mi tumas hames tameh shecheskas tameh tameh shecheskas tahor tahor. So Rava quotes a din that if the person goes down, if a nazir, if someone who's tameh goes down to purify themselves from tumas mase, and then they find out that there's a corpse in the cave, as we spoke about that case yesterday, then we treat the person as tameh, because the reason why they're going down to tovel is obviously because they were tameh. So their prior chazaka, their prior presumptive status is that they're tameh. Now that we discovered that there's a corpse floating in the cave, the assumption is that they're still going to be tameh. Whereas, as we mentioned yesterday, the guy was just going, you know, just going for a dip, let's say. So the assumption is that he's probably tahor. So the Gemara says, So Rav Hamnuna's response to Rava is that I concede to you in the case of a nazir, because the nazir has not shaved yet. In other words, as we spoke about this yesterday as well, according to Rabbi Eliezer earlier in the Masechta, shaving is considered a critical component of the end of the nazira. So if the nazir hasn't shaved yet, he's still effectively considered a nazir. And therefore, if he goes down to Tovel, let's say in the cave, then he finds out that there was a dead body there. So his chazaka is that he's still going to be tamei. So Amar Le Rava, Af Anam Odina L'Chaba Osa Pesach D'Lama Chuser V'Lo Klum. So then Rava says, I also concede in the case of the Karban Pesach, because once the person becomes tahor, there's nothing else they need to do. It's not like by a nazir, where after you become tahor, the nazir has to shave, and there's still more procedures that are left. Once you're tahor, you qualify to participate in bringing a Karban Pesach. So Rava says, why don't we make the same argument by the Karban Pesach? So Amar Le Abayev HaMechuser Harav Shemesh. So Abayev says, not true, because even by the Karban Pesach, you're lacking something. Even after you become tahor, you still have to wait for the sun to set. You're still considered to be a Tevul Yom until the sun sets on the final day of your Tahara. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Le Shimshim Meila Arva. That happens on its own. The sun sets by itself. There's nothing that you can do to speed up or facilitate the process ending any sooner, as opposed to, let's say, by a nazir where you actually have to shave. So that's something different. Then the Gemara says, "Va'afa bayi hadarbe disanya yom melos tavi toch melos lo savi." So the Gemara points out that even Abai himself ended up retracting his position. The Gemara references a very arcane area of halacha. It's a psukim at the beginning of Parshas Tazria. After a woman gives birth, so we know, depending whether she gives birth to a boy or a girl, she's going to be temeya for a certain number of days and then tahora. So, for example, she gives birth to a boy, so she's temeya for 7 days and tahora for 33. For a girl, it's double that, 14 and 66. Now, what that means is that even if she bleeds during those 33 or 66 days, so mida oraisa, we do not treat her as a nida. We assume that's what's called dam tohar. That blood that she's seeing is considered tohar blood. Now again, lemaisa midu rabbanan, that doesn't really apply today for a whole variety of reasons, but in theory, she would be tohara. So the Gemara has the following case. A woman, let's say, gives birth to a girl, so now she has this total span of 80 or really 81 days, you know, that, you know, she's tamea for the 14 and then tohara for 66. And then let's say, for example, she has a miscarriage, let's say on day 79, right? So now, and again, assuming that she miscarried something which would warrant her bringing a carbon, it was considered to be enough of a baby, of a fetus, that would require her to bring a carbon. So the question is, let's say she hasn't brought her carbon yet for the original baby that she had, and now she miscarries on day 79, let's say. So the question is, can she bring one carbon, or does she have to bring multiple carbonos? So Abai darshan is the pasuk in Parshas Tazria that says that if it's yomelos, in other words, if the miscarriage happened within those 80 days, then she could just, you know, suffice with the one carbon for both the baby and the miscarried fetus. If it was after the 80 days, so then she has to bring another carbon. So the Gemara then says, yachol lo tavi alida shalif ne melos. Then the Gemara says, I might have thought, let's say you have the following case. Let's say the woman had a baby. So let's say she had a baby girl. 79 days later, she has a miscarriage. And then another 79 days later, she has a second miscarriage, right? So in that case, I might have argued that since it's still all connected to the previous miscarriage, maybe she would have to bring maybe that would be covered by the original carbon. The Gemara says, no, in that case already, because it's so far removed from the original birth, that second miscarriage is going to require a new carbon. So the Gemara says, doesn't this prove that Abaye himself retracted his previous position? Because you see, in this scenario, of the woman who miscarried, for the second time, 79 days after the original miscarriage, that she's going to have to bring a separate carbon. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Rav Kahana, shiny hacha, the mechasra carbon. That case is different, the case where she had the miscarriage, because she's still lacking the carbon. In other words, she hasn't brought her carbon yet, and that's the reason why her period of Yoledes is not yet over. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Hasav Nami Mechasra Herav Shemesh. What about over there as well? She's still lacking Herav Shemesh. She's still lacking the sun setting in the case of the Karban Pesach. So the Gemara again says, no. Amar Le Abaye Shimsha Memela Arva. The same answer we gave earlier. The sun sets on its own. There's nothing else you need to do. Bringing a Karban is something that you can do proactively. Shaving your hair at the end of the Nazir is something that you do proactively. The sun setting happens by itself, and therefore the standards are going to be different between those areas of Halacha. Okay, says the Mishnah. Hamotzi meis betchila mushkav kedarko, not lo vies tfusaso, shnayim not lan vies tfusasan, matza shlosha, im yesh bein zela zemi dalet amos viad shmona, harezo shchunas kvaros. The Mishnah is the following. Let's say you find a dead body lying on the ground. So the starting point is that you do not have to assume that you found a dead body in some kind of ancient grave or cemetery. It's probably just a one-off, or maybe a two-off. If you find two dead bodies, the Mishnah says, you could take the body, you could take the surrounding dirt. You don't have to start assuming that this is a whole hidden, cemetery here. However, once you find three bodies, specifically the Mishnah says, if there's a gap of 4 to 8 amos between the bodies, that looks very much like a cemetery. So the Mishnah says that's what we call a shchunas kvaros. That's considered a graveyard. And the halacha is that you're not allowed to move bodies when they're part of a graveyard. If the body is lying out in the middle of the field somewhere, it's not part of a graveyard, then you're allowed to move it to, let's say, if you want to bury it in a formal graveyard or part of some kind of a family crypt, that would be okay. But if it's already a formal graveyard, then you can't move it. Then the Mishnah says, Bodek hemenu lahalan esrimama. So then, let's say you find three bodies. So what you would do is, you would start to investigate, to inspect, within 20 amos of the body that you found. Matza echad besof esrimama, bodek hemenu lahalan esrimama, shereglayim ledavar. Then, if you find another body, you have to keep looking another 20 amos, and every body that you find is going to be part of this graveyard, because there's now a basis to assume that this might actually be a graveyard, not just some random corpse that was buried out in the middle of the field. And that's despite the fact that if you were to just find this one single body on its own without anything else, you would just say, okay, so this is just a one-off. I can move the body. I can move the dirt surrounding the body. But the second that you find three bodies within a certain, within a certain distance of one another, you now have to all of a sudden assume this is part of a larger graveyard, and therefore you would not be allowed to move the bodies in that scenario.